Hey, thank you so much for joining me, T-Dub Jackson. And I have a special guest today, Trevor Emden. He is our self-confidence expert. And I'm naming this little course the Astonishing Self-Confidence Course. If you don't know me, I am T-Dub Jackson, and I teach people how to have better relationships. Mostly, I deal with people that have trouble in the relationships right now, because people that are having great relationships typically don't come and seek me out. So most of the folks that come to me are either going through or a disaster, or they're already past disaster in their relationship, and they seek me out for help. And I'm bringing Trevor on with us today, because anytime there's a relationship disaster, man, it seems to wreck folks' self-confidence. It just really takes a beating and affects their work, their peace of mind. It seems like their whole world starts crumbling. So if you're going through a relationship turmoil disaster, I'm very happy to introduce Trevor Emden, our self-confidence expert. Are you there, Trevor?
I'm here, T-Dub, yeah.
All right. Awesome. Trevor is trained in neuro-linguistic programming. That is a mouthful. It's called NLP. He's also author of The Book of Being, and he runs thewizardofwisdom.com. Trevor, I'm sure I left a bunch out there. Do you want to go ahead and fill in the gaps for me?
Well, I don't want to give you a long autobiography, but yeah, I'm a mental health professional. That's how I started my professional career. And I've trained in, as you say, in NLP and a number of psychotherapies along the way. But maybe it's more helpful if I just say a little bit about why I even started down that path.
Yeah, sure.
Because I don't want to upset people or go into a lot of detail, but I lost my sister and then my mum by the time I was 9. And then my dad, a couple of years later, had a disastrous remarriage, had a really genuinely wicked stepmother, and she left when I was 13, and then that roller coaster came to an end. Life, of course, was never the same again, but I kind of found myself looking at life and thinking, right, well, I've been through a lot of stuff. A lot of it hurt. All of it seemed to be out of my control. So a lot of big relationship breakups there when your mum dies at 9.
Yeah.
And so I thought, right, now I need to figure out how I can be happy for the rest of my life, because that was kind of ripped out of our family.
Yeah, with all that happening at the very beginning.
Yeah. And I realized I couldn't look at my dad, or indeed I had a baby brother as well, as role models, because my dad had been grief-stricken too. Mm-hmm. So I started looking around to start with at all my friends and discovered that most of them were kind of set on a default setting of, let's be miserable. Everybody was either moaning about, well, they moaned about their own bodies, they moaned about school, they moaned about their other friends, then they moaned about their girlfriends, they moaned about their parents, and their parents moaned about them, and on it went. And the parents, of course, also worried about the state of the world. And I was, even at that age, I suppose, maybe I was a bit precocious, but I was kind of aware that there we were in England. You listeners can probably tell I'm British, in the 1970s, in one of the most affluent countries in the world, in one of the most astonishing times in all of human history, and people were, no matter what the situation, unhappy as I saw it for no reason.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're really curious about how to break this pattern.
Yeah. So I started looking for teachers and yeah. And models, and so NLP just became, really was it's a very powerful, very useful model, and we'll talk hopefully more about that later on, but it became one of the models that I found for how we can actually take charge of our own happiness.
Well, thank you. You know, it's funny how life works out, and the troubles that we end up having turn out to be the blessings. So now that you're here, I want to thank you so much for being here, because
it's a pleasure.
You know, I've worked with thousands and thousands of people since 2007 that are going through breakups, going through divorces, or they're just not in the relationships that they want. Oh. And it really hurts their self-confidence. You know, I can hear it in their emails. I can hear it when I talk to them. And so what we're going to be doing today is showing our folks how to get this self-confidence back, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So I was going to say, just might help your listeners to know that I went through a couple of divorces myself. So, and I'm now very happily married and have been for a few years now. So there is a way through.
Sure. So Trevor, can you tell me a little bit before we get into the actual techniques and everything? This self-confidence, what exactly is self-confidence? I think it would be helpful to talk about that a little bit.
Okay. Well, bottom line, self-confidence is liking yourself for who you are, like your own individuality, your own personality. And I think it's also about liking your own beliefs and your own values and trusting yourself that when you make a decision, you feel good about the decision that you're making, you feel good about handling the consequences, whatever they are, and mm-hmm. about following through. So it comes from the core of our being, even if not everybody sees things your way, because not everybody will, whatever you mm-hmm. see in life.
So to put it another way, it's kind of realizing that you have worth no matter what conditions or what happens to you in life. And it's kind of what I've discovered too as I get a little bit older, is that we all have value. It doesn't depend on what other people think or what happens to us.
In some of the workshops that I've run, I've said to some of the participants when they're coming out with statements like, I'm not anybody very special, I'm not worth very much, those kind of things that people do trot out. It's so sad when I hear people say things like that. And I say to them, you know what? There are nearly 7 billion people on this planet, and no one but no one like you. Even if you're an identical twin, mm-hmm. there's nobody with exactly your thoughts, your feelings, your experiences, your way of processing information, your way of opening a can of beans. That makes you the most precious gem on the planet. And when you start to value that, then you get others starting to value you for who you are too. So self-confidence is a two-way process, but it's a two-way street, but it's a one-person process, I suppose is a way to put that.
Yeah, I think it's a really useful definition. Self-confidence is realizing you have worth no matter what happens to you. I think that's really useful. Because people tell me during and after breakups, other challenging relationship issues that happens, you know, infidelity and cheating, and so they really feel like they've lost somehow. They've lost their self-confidence. Mm. How does a person, how do they get that self-confidence to begin with? Where does that, I mean, is it something that they're given, or can you talk about that?
Well, I don't think you see any not confident babies.
That's a good point.
So I think we're naturally born just, and indeed, if you look at the animal kingdom as well, I mean, you don't generally see nervous cats, you know. Mm-hmm. But then as we grow and we as human beings, obviously we do become self-aware, and then the confidence comes from feedback from the environment. In most cases, initially from our parents, mothers, of course, particularly important for most of us, and then, you know, significant others, grandparents and teachers and maybe aunts and uncles and who else. So we get to learn that certain aspects of ourselves are acceptable. People laugh at us, people smile at us, people give us hugs, give us gifts, play with us, etc. And we also learn at the same time there are certain parts of us that are not acceptable. You know, it's mm-hmm. probably okay to throw up on Aunt Mabel's dress when you're 3 days old, but not when you're 13 years old.
Yeah, right.
So we learn that there are certain non-acceptable things too. So we condition ourselves. But the self-confidence comes, we're born naturally with it, and then we build it internally, or we internalize the messages that we get by just watching the signals that come to us from the environment.
Sounds like a different way to say it is that we've already have it, and that somehow we, as life happens to us, we don't lose it, really. We just cover it up.
Yeah, I think all of us end up with two, I call them masks. There's a mask that is like, this is what I want you to see. This is my acceptable face. And there's a hidden one, which is like, this is what I'd prefer you didn't see. Mm-hmm. And we all have that to some extent. There's nothing wrong with that, unless we're actually hiding big aspects of our personalities. And that's causing us pain to do that. Like, I remember working with one guy who didn't want his dad to know that he was gay, and it was really hurting him because he had to choose between having a relationship and not having a relationship with his own dad, or having a relationship with his dad and pretending that he just hadn't found a girlfriend yet. And eventually he got through that and was able to tell his dad, and it was all great. And his father said, "Oh, is that all that's wrong with you? I thought you were a terrorist or something." But that's extreme, and I think most of us, you know, there are certain things that all of us like. This is my personal thoughts, my personal feelings, and they don't hurt anybody else, and they don't hurt me, and that's a bit of privacy, I mm-hmm. guess. But we all have an acceptable face and one that we'd rather keep to ourselves. So that isn't a problem generally for most people with confidence. It's when we think that the acceptable face is no longer acceptable, and when people go through relationship breakups, that's the big bogeyman. That's the big fear that they face.
So you're kind of talking about how they lost it, right? How they lost that. Because we've been talking about how does a person get it to begin with. They get it kind of when they're born, and then it just kind of doesn't necessarily fade. It depends on your upbringing and what kind of events you start associating with your self-worth, I guess. Is that what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, these are two ends of the same spectrum,
right?
How we get it and how we feel to lose it. So I suppose they are connected together, aren't they? And I think it's important to say here, so people really hear this, you don't lose your self-confidence. So what happens is, let's just go back a step. You internalize your confidence from the feedback that you've got from your growing up years.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time you reach, you know, your mid-teens and early 20s, for most of us, we feel that we've got a sense of who we are and that there are bits of us that are okay and bits of us that we're still not sure of. And some of it takes a bit longer than others for it to mature, but that's okay. And then we find someone and fall in love. And so there's a kind of natural assumption, without even asking, that that person must love me because of what I think I am, the way I present to the world, and to this man or woman in particular, he or she loves me because of who I am. And then that breaks up, and then what we've done is we've kind of invested our own sense of self-confidence, our own sense of self-worth in the other person, and then they tell us, well, actually, I don't love you anymore in some way, however they demonstrate that. And that is going to rock your world. But you haven't lost the self-confidence. You've simply placed it inside the other person. I'm making gestures here with my hands, and I suddenly realized.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting, because one of the questions I had, and it doesn't even sound right saying it now because where we're at, but you know, one of the questions I had was, can somebody get it back? Can somebody get their self-confidence back? So, you know, I had just a wonderful sweetheart of a girl, and I won't mention any names, but she found out her boyfriend was cheating on her, and it just crushed her self-confidence, because it's what you're saying. It's like it totally rocks her foundation of who she feels like she is. So I guess it's not about how do you get your self-confidence back. Can somebody refine it again? You know?
Yes, how to reconnect with it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think if I can make another reference to the animal kingdom, if you frighten a tortoise or a hedgehog or porcupine, that animal will, you know, or a tortoise will retreat into its shell, or the hedgehog or the porcupine will curl up into a prickly ball because it's been scared.
Yeah.
But there, and that's kind of emotionally what we do when something big like that hurts us.
But sure.
The animal will come out again. The animal doesn't stay there indefinitely, but because we're human beings, we have all this intelligence, but our emotions kind of don't catch up necessarily all the time. So I think what happens is that we tend to go, well, I'm not going out there again. It's dangerous. Mm-hmm. Somebody hurt me, and I'm never, ever going out again.
Mm-hmm.
And we stay, as it were, metaphorically curled up into that small prickly ball so no one can get near us, forgetting that we've actually imprisoned ourselves inside that little ball. So it's not that we've lost it. It's that we're too scared to come out again, because we think that someone else can do that to us. So really, the key to reclaiming your self-confidence, I'm going to say reclaiming rather than getting it back because it's not lost. The key to reclaiming it is actually finding the courage, if you like, and the connections to be yourself again, because whatever happened, however you got hurt, whether it was a bit of both of you or whether the other person was just really Mr. or Mrs. Nasty, whatever it was, that situation no longer exists. Even if you want to be back with that person or you want to move on, that situation no longer exists because you've changed. They may or may not change, but if you change, one of the metaphors I was thinking about is that if you were dancing a waltz before and now the music you put on is an Irish jig, it's going to be impossible for that person. They'll dance to the waltz rhythm. Does that make sense?
Yes, total sense.
A different beat, a different energy. So when you change, the situation will change as well. And really all you need to do is reconnect with what you already had internally and believe in it and trust it again. And that's really what I teach people how to do.
Gotcha. So let me just feedback kind of what I'm hearing you saying. You're talking about that porcupine and how he rolls up into a ball. And I think that's so descriptive of what happens to a human's heart. And I talk about this a lot when I'm working with people, is when you're in love and you're falling in love, your heart is very open and you're in a sense vulnerable. And vulnerable becomes this word where people think it's a weak word, but it's really not. Yeah. But I don't want to get into that. But so you have this open heart, but then when something happens like that, then our heart closes and we try to protect ourselves. We close our heart because we're trying to protect ourselves. So, and part of that is, you know, when we start closing off, then we lose our value of ourself as well, because part of what we get derived from our value is being open and giving. So we're going to get here into the actual technique here in a minute, which I think is just brilliant. You've been sharing it with me. But before I do that, I want to ask you, you know, so you found this technique that which kind of helps open your heart and helps you kind of refine your quote unquote lost self-confidence, which we really don't lose. We just got to refine it. But Why does this work? Why does your technique work?
I think what people don't realize, or maybe even don't believe, is that our emotions are just as capable of healing as our bodies. If you broke your leg, pretty much everybody nowadays believes, well, you know, I go to the doctor or the hospital and they know how to fix it. My leg mm-hmm. will heal. My bone will be mm-hmm. as strong, if not stronger than before, and I'll be walking and running and skiing or whatever I do with my legs. But we don't believe that about our emotions. And partly that's because we don't know where to go, because people just live on autopilot all the time. I suppose if we are vulnerable, to my mind, that's where the vulnerability comes, because we don't actually know how to heal. What, you know, what's an emotional bandage? What's the mm-hmm. equivalent of an emotional plaster? And it starts with the imagination. That's where the healing balm is, you know, because actually we live through our imagination. We think we don't. We think that the real world, the solid world out there is what there is, and imagination is just something that children have and to be dismissed. But that's not actually how it is at all.
Can you talk about, you said autopilot, which I think is it rings true to me, because this is what I see going on with a lot of folks going through relationship troubles. They do almost kind of get on this autopilot. Can you tell me a little bit more about what do you mean by the autopilot?
When I was giving you the little summary of my life story, mm-hmm. As I said, I discovered that people were kind of set on this autopilot sort of default setting of mm-hmm. self-negativity, worry, misery, frustration. And I think one of the things that I like to give a bit of perspective on this, for example, is that we now live in a world, because of the mass media, so on television and now radio and across the internet as well, where there's a 24/7 drip feed of things to worry about. Okay, now I don't know what's in the news right now in the USA, but you know, over here we've had floods. It's still raining mm-hmm. today as I speak to you. We've had a couple of policemen murdered in the last week or so, a couple of children abducted. There are countries at war and so on. So we've only got to turn on any of the news channels mm-hmm. to see any of that ongoing. You can watch it 24 hours a day. So let me give you a bit of perspective here. Most countries are not at war.
Right.
Most children will never be abducted. Most policemen will have perfectly happy careers and retire and live to old mm-hmm. age. You know what I'm saying? And we have this perspective on the world that it's a frightening, worrying, scary place. Do you remember swine flu and bird flu?
Oh, yeah.
I never met a single person who got one of those diseases.
Right.
Did you?
No.
You know, and they were supposed to be pandemics. They were going to wipe out, you know, huge swathes of the population. Never happened. We have that kind of general background all the time, this drip feed of things to worry about and get frightened of. And the autopilot setting for ourselves. Now, I'm aware there's a slight cultural difference here, because in Britain, we're not supposed to boast. Mm-hmm. We call it blowing our own trumpet. We're not supposed mm-hmm. to do that. We're not supposed to say, I'm really good at such and such.
Americans don't have that rule.
No, I really like that about your country. I wish we had it too. But nevertheless, you know, we're supposed to be modest. And, you know, if somebody pays us a compliment, we go, oh, well, it was nothing really. To the other person, no, it wasn't nothing. It was something. Otherwise, they wouldn't have said thank you. So, you know, at a global level and even at a very personal level, we're always thinking about what's not working. And you know what? The big question we ask ourselves, T-Dub, we say, what if it all goes wrong?
Yeah.
About anything. You know, what if I get back together with that person and it all goes wrong again? And obviously that is a big decision. Mm-hmm. But why don't we ever ask ourselves, what if it all goes right? Because you know what? The odds are stacked in your favor. Most things are all right most of the time.
That is so true. We do. We get so focused on the media, and then we turn our focus, not just on media, but we focus on, because we're humans, we have this tendency to focus on what could go wrong, what's going to go wrong, but when there's all these things going right, we don't worry, you know, the planet's spinning around, you know, at millions of miles an hour, and there's all kinds of planets. We don't spend a lot of time worrying about all that stuff. But
don't stop them off.
Right, exactly. And like you said, there's a lot of love going around. I had this discussion with my niece, actually. She was like 13 years old. And she was already getting this really negative worldview. She watches too much TV, I think. And she believes. I think the problem is she believes too much of what's on TV, because there's all kinds of people that are out there helping each other right now and caring for each other and being loving towards each other. We choose what thoughts we have. And I think what you're saying about the autopilot is that most people are not consciously choosing the movies that are playing inside of our head. And that's what kind of what's really going on.
That's exactly right.
We have these movies playing inside of our head, but we're just sitting there. It's like going to a theater and sitting through a bad movie and not realizing we can get up and walk out and go to a different movie.
Not only that, Tito, but we go and see the movie in our head over and over and over again.
So what I hear you saying is kind of why your technique works is you're going to show people how to kind of interrupt that. And that goes back to when you're giving us your introduction, is that you kind of realize that people were walking around thinking everything's miserable because of the events that happened to them. And those events happen. They play movies about what they mean. So in a way, you're going to kind of like cut that movie tape and give them a new movie
so
to play.
Sorry to cut in on you there, but I think
the
first thing to realize when, because you said people about things that happen to people, all right? And I realized that in a relationship breakup, it's pretty unusual, I think. You correct me if I'm wrong, you have more knowledge of this than I do, but I think it's pretty unusual that both parties equally agree to just break up. It's usually one who wants to end the relationship more than the other, but that's fair to say?
Yeah, usually one wants to end it more than the other.
Yeah. So the person who doesn't want it to end feels like a victim of that.
Right.
Okay. And it's very easy to go around in our lives thinking that we are victims of all kinds of circumstances. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't help what happened to me when I was X years old, or I can't help that my mom died when I was 9. I had no control over that event.
Right.
But what I do have control over, and what I realized as I went through my growing up years and my training, is the way that I choose to give that meaning. So the first belief to kind of get a hold of is that you're actually starting from the point of view of, I can't help it, there's nothing I can do, and so that's why I feel this way. And actually there's a separate...
That's the autopilot that you're talking about. Yeah.
That's the autopilot.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm kind of getting clear on how or why this works, because you're going to show us a different way to do these movies.
Okay.
So let's talk about specifically... what I think is so exciting is what you're calling the astonishing self-confidence. I don't know if that's what you've named the technique, but astonishing self-confidence. So what are the steps? How how often do we need to do these things? So let's talk about the steps there.
Okay, well, let's talk about the steps first. Okay, so the first thing, we've already talked about, which is to become aware. You know, as human beings, we are self-aware, which is an amazing capacity that we have, actually. So just become aware of what you are thinking. What is the movie playing in your head? So, you know, if Joe Blow wants to leave me, then what are you saying to yourself about that? What are the images that
What does it mean? What's the images that about, okay, so he wants to leave. What are you telling yourself that it means about you?
Yes. Because it does. It does rock people's worlds. There's no, I'm not trying to diminish that in any way. So, you know, and it's a big shock. I suppose what I'm trying to do is turn around and say, well, let's make it a big wake-up call to how you can actually take charge of your own life and your own destiny in a different way. There are, like, different components to thoughts. There are words that you'll say in your head. There are pictures that most people make pictures of some kind in their head, but not everybody does. So it might be audio only. And there are kind of belief system. So the belief will be, I can't help it, I'm a victim. That's the first thing to look at. Then when you think of that, then what's the picture or the audio, the dial-in and monologue that you, and the pictures that come up for you when you think that thought, okay? So maybe the easiest way, T-Dub, to demonstrate this is to just give people an example that's kind of away from the relationship issue, because I guess that might be quite hard for people to focus on, and maybe some listeners are not even in that place right now.
Okay.
Would that be helpful if we just give...
Sure.
Like a generalized example. Okay, so here's something that I think pretty much anybody should be able to do wherever they're listening to this right now. If you just take a moment to think of a teacher that you had at school that you really didn't get on with, right? Because I think probably most of us had at least one teacher that we didn't like too well. If you really loved all your teachers, then I don't know, think of an ex-neighbor or somebody, ex-mother or somebody, I don't know, you didn't get on with.
Okay, mine is Mrs., and this is really her name, it was Mrs. Seaman, S-E-A-M-A-N, Mrs. Seaman.
Wow.
She was my fifth grade teacher. I didn't like her.
Okay, fantastic. So when you think of Mrs. Seaman, first of all, presumably you've got some kind of memory or image of her in your head.
Uh-huh.
Right? What feelings come up, even though it's years later, presumably, but what feelings come up?
The picture that I have when I think of her, and it's a picture more than a movie, actually, is just her eyes, her glaring at me with disapproval.
Okay. I can almost see her myself.
She had this short brown hair, and she had glasses, but she would glare out through these glasses, it looks like disapproval in her eyes.
You know, I knew she had glasses, and mine was called Miss Higman, and she had glasses too, and bright red lipstick. I realize this is kind of, you know, being done with, in the spirit of fun, but how does it feel when you bring Mrs. Seaman to mind?
I think that's what holds that in my mind, is because I felt like I wasn't, you know, I was only, I can't remember how old I was 11 or 10 or 11 in fifth grade, and I felt like I wasn't good. I wasn't a good boy when she looked at me.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
I didn't feel good about myself.
Okay. So I don't expect you've got over her by now, but you can see that if that was someone who'd, you know, in a relationship just broke up with you, that would be a pretty powerful picture to have.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's leave her for a moment.
Okay.
Okay, and if I said, okay, so the next thing to do, just blank out that screen with Mrs. Seaman on it or whoever your listeners have, just have a white screen there. And now just think of a happy holiday memory.
Okay.
Okay, got one? Okay.
I've got one, yeah.
Sorry, you don't have to share it, but but now you have a different picture, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and just out of interest, is this also a still picture or is this a little movie?
Yeah, this one's actually a movie. Yeah, I don't mind sharing. My father was born and raised during the Depression, and they never had enough money to buy him a bike. So I believe I just remember the Christmas. I was probably 12 or 13, and we got him his first bike. I still remember it was a brown bike. He named it Rusty. You know, he never had a bike all of his life. By this time, he was 65 years old, maybe a little younger than that. But he was in his late 50s or early 60s. So this is his time he got his first bike. And I just remember that Christmas. And it's a movie. It's him on the bike going down the driveway, all wobbly and stuff. But he was just laughing so, like a little kid, just laughing, you know, very unsure, unconfident, you know, putting his legs down and everything, but just laughing. I never heard him laugh like that.
Oh, that's gorgeous. Thank you for sharing that. Okay. So now there's so many different things, we can't go on all day. So, but one of the things just out of interest to notice is that for you, and this may not be true for everybody, but for you, a movie probably feels better than a still picture.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But the point of doing that little process for the listeners, what I want people to get is that there's a couple of things. First of all, notice that you can choose what to think about. You can choose what you think. Okay? So when I said, think of the teacher that you didn't like at school, you were able to recall Mrs. Seaman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, you probably haven't thought of Mrs. Seaman in I don't know how many years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But and in order to do that, for that moment or two, you stop thinking about whatever you were thinking about before. And then when I say, now think of the happy holiday memory, you're able to switch to thinking of that lovely memory about your father and the bike.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In other words, you don't need someone at the other end of a telephone or a microphone to tell you to do that. You can actually say, well, I don't have to think about this thing. I can think about anything I like. Now, and what happens is when you think about something different, and I gave you two, I hope, relatively innocuous but also quite extreme things to do there on purpose so that you could tell the difference. But when you choose one thought over another, you get a different set of feelings come up.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take that into the realm of self-confidence and self-esteem, and especially if you're going through a difficult thing like a breakup. Can we do that?
Sure.
In a situation like that, you probably aren't going to be able to switch from, you know, the Mrs. Seaman of your memory to the memory of your dad with the bike in one go like that. That's probably too big of a leap. But what you can do is kind of say, right, what I've got in my head is pictures and sounds and maybe moving images of whatever I'm going through right now, this person breaking up with me or whatever it might be. And what you can do is you can say, right, well, that's my movie. That movie makes me feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to watch that movie. So take over as the director. You've got to imagine that you're like the Steven Spielberg of your own head.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Right? So now what you can do is you can go in and say, right, okay, everybody, freeze frame, make the actors all stop. right? Go in there with your director's megaphone, whatever you have, right? And actually start to make little changes to the details in that movie inside your head. You can change anything. You can freeze the frame. You can have music in the background, have different music in the background. You can change their costumes. You can have them say different words. You can have to say the same words in a different tone of voice. Mm-hmm. You can even have, and I've had people do this, have Bugs Bunny run across the set, right, in the middle of the action. Right? However ridiculous that seems, if that brings up a giggle or a smile or mm-hmm. just makes you feel that's ridiculous, that's different from feeling I don't know how to cope. That's a different feeling. And by doing that simple process, you've taken the first step in taking control of how you are and therefore your destiny, rather than feeling that you are a victim of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So let's back it up here for a second. So our first thing we have to do is become aware of the picture, the thoughts, the movie that we're running in our yes. mind, which I think is a huge step. I'm so believe, like you're saying, that most people just not even conscious of what they're actually thinking, and they just kind of go on an autopilot.
Can I just stop you teed up one second?
Sure, sure.
And say, I've had people, you know, some of my private clients, had people actually say to me at this point, I can't get it, I can't get it, I can't get it. So if anybody is trying this and they feel they can't get it, here's what I say to them. Unfold your arms or uncross your legs and breathe. Because quite often what people do is they crunch their bodies up because they're feeling bad anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you just notice where you're holding tension, just release that and take a deep breath and then do it again, and it'll come.
Yeah, open up the porcupine, yeah. When I'm trying to imagine this with Mrs. Seaman again. So, you know, that picture originally was just her staring at me, but I realized kind of what happened is, like, you know, I don't remember specifically, but I remember passing her my test back to me, and it just that look of like, yeah, I knew you weren't going to do get well on it, but that was a picture as a little boy that I have that's still kind of in my mind. So what you're saying is I can kind of take control of that movie now.
Okay. Let's see what we can do with your memory of Mr. Seaman. All right. So how bright are the colors? How vivid are those eyes?
What I notice is she's really close to me, like almost in my face, even though she really
okay.
wasn't.
Right. So you've got a close up there. Okay. Mm-hmm. So just imagine, I want you to imagine then that you have a really sophisticated TV remote control here, okay? And when you press a button, you can zoom out
okay.
on that close-up, okay? So if you zoom her away until she's shrinking, 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 until she's about the size of, I don't know, a postage stamp or something, mm-hmm. could you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what happens to the intensity of the feeling?
Yeah, it goes down. It's less.
I know these things sound a little weird, and it takes a little practice for people to do this kind of stuff. But honestly, T-Dub, it's worth it. You know, 5-10 minutes in your bathroom or on your sofa or wherever, just say to yourself, hang on, I don't have to feel this way. I don't have to make that picture. When you start to realize it's a choice and you can make it go away, you can shift it. Even if you only shift it a little bit and mm-hmm. it comes back big and bright again, do it again. You know, what happens if you draw, get an imaginary felt pen and draw Groucho Marx spectacles and a mustache on Mrs. Seaman's face?
Yeah, she had a mustache too. I think it's another thing that was terrifying about her. But here, I think I just had a little breakthrough here, because I think what happened is, you know, I pushed that picture away because, like, it was all on my face and I pushed it away. And I think what's happened is, like, so oddly enough, that I can kind of see her as a person now and not this big, like, bigger than life thing. And what it just occurred to me that maybe something was going on in her life that caused her to act that way, and it didn't have anything to do with me.
Yeah.
Maybe she is going through a divorce or something.
So isn't that interesting? Because now by getting a distance on the picture, you've mm-hmm. got a different perspective
right.
on Mrs. Seaman.
Right. Wow.
It's fabulous. And it's so fast.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, 101 things could be going on, yeah. And I'm sitting there telling myself that because the way she looked at me, that she's a human, she's human too, the way she looked at me said something about my character.
And, you know, what's amazing is that, I mean, in your case, it sounds like Mrs. Seaman hasn't had a big influence on your adult life, but for so many people, these bogeymen and bogeywomen mm-hmm. haunt us, and people like her can, of course, have a long-term effect on our own self-confidence and self-image. you know, if she did you a lot of emotional damage when you were an 11, 12-year-old schoolboy.
Well, it's weird because, I mean, I'm kind of opening up here, but it's kind of weird because I never really thought she did. I felt like this little, I felt my heart open a little bit when I did that. And I don't want to get corny here, but I really did. I felt just a little bit better about myself, you know? And I think what we have a tendency as kids, events happen to us, and then we attach, like you're saying, we attach those movies.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we don't know what we're doing when we're kids. So that's thank you. That's really great.
Although you're very welcome. And I do wish that we taught kids this stuff in schools. Nobody ever taught me how to use my imagination in school. Have you ever heard of a kid where a teacher said to them, told them, look, you don't actually have to feel anxious going into an exam room. There is another way you could feel.
Hmm.
We just don't teach this stuff. We just teach kids to cram their heads full of facts.
That's a good point. So we've talked about step one, become aware of the movies you're playing in your head. Then two, I think it's brilliant. You take over of that movie as a director. You can change the quickness, the speed of it, or if you're more audio, you might want to speed it up or slow it down. Put a gesture hat on them, make them dance around, or have cartoon characters come in. So what are we trying to do? We want to do this and kind of get some kind of emotional – we want to look at this in a different way, I guess, right?
You want to keep fiddling with the details until you can play the whole thing through from beginning to end with all the changes that you've made and feel comfortable watching it.
Gotcha. So that would be like step three. That would be like just keep replaying it until you're comfortable.
Three.
Okay.
Yeah. Keep changing it until you come, because people say to me, oh, but that's not what really happened. And I say to them, how do you know what really happened?
I was just going to ask you that. I was going to say, you know, Trevor, you know, I don't want to be devil's advocate, but aren't we just kind of like BSing ourselves? I mean, are we BSing ourselves? Yeah. So that's what you're bringing up right now.
But actually the real BSing ourselves is what's going on when we feel like we're a victim and there's nothing we can do about it.
Because them breaking up with you or not doing what you want doesn't say anything about you as a person or your self-worth. That's the real truth.
No, except that you believe that you're a victim and life's on autopilot.
Yeah, you played a movie that wasn't really true.
Yeah.
And this helps you break out of that. I totally get that. So let me just run through one more time for everybody that's taking notes. Step one, beware of the movie you're watching. Be aware of the movie you're playing or the audio that you're listening to if you're an audio type person. Step two, take over as the movie director. And step three, replay that movie until you're comfortable. And for me, I just had this kind of like shift. That's what happened to me.
Yeah, keep making changes. So for you, you know, just zooming out or sending the image away was enough for you. But for some people, if there's like a scene or a scenario. I mean, let me give you an example of a guy that I worked with. Obviously, I won't give you any names.
Perfect.
A few years ago now, I worked with this guy. And he, you know, when I use this technique with private clients, I don't ask them to tell me what's going on in their memories. They don't have to disclose anything. There's no need for me to know that. So he just had an uncomfortable feeling, and he said something that was traumatic for him that he couldn't let go of, and it had been haunting him for some years. So we went through that process, and when it got to the part of changing the details, being the director and changing the details, he got stuck. And we went through it, I can't remember now, 5, 6, 8 times maybe. Mm-hmm. And eventually he said to me, I just can't do it. I'm going to have to tell you what it was. And I said, well, you know, if you're comfortable doing that. And he was actually, I mean, it was a big relationship breakup because it was his father's deathbed. He'd wanted that to be different to the way it had actually happened. And so he said, you know, what I'm trying to do in the memory is bring my dad back to life. And he said, of course, my mind won't accept that. My father's gone. Mm-hmm. You know, he won't come back to life. And I said, okay, could you make a different change that would make you feel more comfortable? And after a few minutes discussion, he said, well, I could hold his hand. And I said, okay.
So in the movie, he's holding his hand now.
And in the movie, he went back in and held his hand as his father died. And I watched that guy. I just sat in silence, T-Dub. You know, I don't know what he did in his own mind. I watched that guy, watched the expressions on his face change. I watched a little tear roll down his cheek. And it took about, I don't know, maybe 3 minutes. 3 minutes of that man's life. And it was gone. And he opened his eyes and he went, oh, I can do it now. And he was free of something that had haunted him for probably a decade or more.
Wow, really powerful. Really powerful.
Really powerful. Yeah.
So let's talk about that because, you know, this was on his father's deathbed. Do we need to like wait for these big events, or is it how? I mean, how often do you think we should run this technique? I mean, should we just wait till crisis points, or is there more opportune times to do it?
No. Oh, okay. That's a good question. I think first of all, the background of the drip feed of negativity is going to go on whether you do this or not. So you kind of, I used to think, I got to a point in my life where I thought, I've read enough books, I've been on enough courses, I've got enough qualifications, I don't need to do any more of this. I'm ready to go out into the world and just, you know, start putting something back in now.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully I still am doing that. But what I discovered was that after, I don't know, 3-4 months, my own sense of self-worth, my own sense of what I could deliver and just optimism started to ebb away. And it wasn't any big event. There was nothing dramatic or disastrous going on in my life. It was just self-doubt began to creep in. And so eventually I caught that, became self-aware of that, and thought, you know what, I have to just keep topping up, because there's always this negativity. And the other big thing here, and I talk a lot about this in other places on my websites and seminars and stuff, is that, of course, one of the most powerful drives, and you know, you're talking about relationships all the time, but the most powerful drive and the most powerful human need is the need to be liked. And so it's very easy to sit in the bar or sit in a coffee shop or whatever and just join in with all the worry and the moaning, because everybody likes you, right? What I'm here to tell you is what I discovered was when I became and was generally on a day-to-day basis more upbeat and optimistic, more people liked me. More people wanted to be around me. So yeah, actually, you know, don't worry that you're going to lose your friends. So I would say, although obviously what I'm giving you here in this interview, that technique is kind of useful for traumatic events and maybe even emergency situations, actually keeping yourself topped up with positive, I read a lot of self-help books, meditate, go on courses, even if they're online courses, whatever, just keep yourself going with positives. And I tell you what as well, switch off the news. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to go, for heaven's sake? It's so people say, oh, I need to know what's going on in the world. And I go, why? What are you going to do about it? I know a lot of people won't take that advice, but.
Yeah, well, here's what's occurring to me, Trevor, is you need to go off autopilot.
Yes.
If we can get off autopilot, that's so important. I think that step one, I think, is really important about getting off of autopilot. As you go about your day,
yes,
be aware of the movies that you're watching and telling yourself. And it's not just for self-confidence, I don't think, but say you're driving through traffic and somebody cuts you off. Yeah. Now, there's all kinds of movies you could be watching. You know, how dare he cut me off? And you know, it means that he's not respecting me. And that's one kind of movie you could cut you off. And this is a true life story. not life story, but we were driving from Russellville to Little Rock, and somebody cut us off. And Jeannie, my wife, is sitting next to me, and she said something to the effect of, oh, I wonder if he's got an emergency. You know, and that's like that. So she automatically comes up with these useful or more positive movies. I mean, because like you said, we can choose which movies, and we don't really, without any facts, we really don't know. It's not useful to think that he just did it to be a shyster.
That's right. Another true story. I think it was Alan Cohen in one of his books. He used to ride the subway in New York. For some reason, I can't remember now, on a Sunday. And it was always very quiet, and he would read the paper. And this particular Sunday, a man and a couple of kids got on, and the kids were raucous. And they were running up and down the carriage and making a lot of noise and disturbing people. And the father took no notice. And eventually, Alan Cohen said, I couldn't stand it any longer. So he said, he nudged the father and said, excuse me, are those your children? You know, they're really disturbing everybody. And the father went, oh, I'm so sorry. Are they really? He said, we've just come from the hospital where their mother just died, and I hadn't even noticed.
Wow. Yeah.
And suddenly you get a whole different...
That really...
You're right. We don't know, and we do give things meaning. And that's why it's not BS to change the memories in our minds, because actually, you know, ask any detective, ask any policeman, if they interviewed more than two witnesses of one event if the accounts match up, because no two people remember the same thing the same way.
Right. Well, and this is a great way to, we're getting ready to wrap up here, but this is a great way to tie this all back, because the truth is, when we're talking about self-confidence, obviously this technique can be used in a lot of different ways, but when we're talking about self-confidence, the truth is you have value no matter what happens to you. So by using this technique, we get back to the truth.
Yes. Yes, that's a really good way of summing it up.
Let me just add, I have a tendency to ask this question in interviews where I'm talking to people, we're getting ready to wrap up. Trevor, is there anything that I'm not asking that I should be asking you? Anything that anything else you want to add before we review?
I think the caveat that I would put in, T-Dub, is whoever's listening to this, people have a tendency to think, some people have a tendency to think, yeah, it's all right for him to say that, but this doesn't apply to me because ... Right? And I'm guilty of this myself. So again, it's about being self-aware and just being very honest with yourself. And if anybody is doing that, I would just say, check out that you're actually not doing that just because you're a prickly porcupine. Because to be honest, if you're listening to this, then I guess you're looking for change. And if you're looking for change, you're capable of making the change. And
fabulous.
Don't be scared of it. Don't be scared of it.
Fabulous. Now, we have got a special gift for all of our listeners, but before we get into that, I just want to do a real quick review. I think this is such – I think this is a life-changing class that we just did here. So let's just do a quick review. First, we talked about what self-confidence is, and self-confidence is really about understanding that your self-worth, you are worthwhile as a person no matter what.
No matter what
happens.
Absolutely.
You may have done stuff, you may have done things, but you're deep down, if you did something that you just can't get over, it's more that you didn't have the right data. Because when you know better, you do better. So
yes, I think that's a good point too. We're always doing the best we can with the information to hand.
And then we talked about that you don't really lose your self-confidence. It just kind of gets covered up. And we talked about movies, these movies that we play in our mind, and how that's the key to how we're the movies, the pictures that we put in our mind, or the things that we say to ourselves affects our feelings, and then our feelings affect our behaviors. Then we talked about the astonishing self-confidence technique is what I'm going to call it, where step one is to just be aware of the movies that you're playing inside of your head. Two is to step in and be the director, direct that darn movie. And three is to keep working on that movie and replaying that movie until you have that shift, until you see that the more of the real truth that can be going on.
I think the key to start that all off is to remember that instead of thinking or coming from the belief, I can't help it, you switch that to, I don't have to feel like this. I have a choice. And when I feel different, I'll make different decisions. I'll make better choices.
Nice. And lastly is what you were just talking about. Don't think this doesn't apply to you. we're all humans, and that's the way we work. We make pictures, we make movies inside of our head. Be aware of them and realize that you can change the action. You can be the director of that. So, Trevor, you have a very special gift for our listeners here. You know, this can be used in a lot of ways. So I'm just let you go ahead and tell them about that and where they can get it.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. I put together an entire program for building and rebuilding self-confidence. Your self-confidence is the energy that drives your life. So I ended up calling it Esteem Engine.
I love it.
So, okay. So, and what's inside of that, T-Dub, is there's a book, which is the core of it. Okay. And along with the book, because I wanted to make this really easy for folks to actually access the information, the book's not a long read, but inside of it, after a few pages, they'll come to a point where it says, right, now listen to audio number one. So I've done some hypnosis audios, because NLP which I realize a lot of people won't know what that is, but it's the child really of hypnosis.
Okay.
From hypnosis. So I've used very gentle hypnosis just so that you can almost do this on autopilot. Please don't do it while you're driving. But otherwise, yeah, there's some MP3s that go with the company of the book that people can. And I'll tell you, in the book, now listen to this one. Of course, once you've listened to it once, you can do it over and over again. So that all people have to do is plug in their earphones and let your subconscious and me take over and do the work. So I don't think it gets any easier than that. And also, I was thinking about what else could I add in that would make this so that this is like as complete a program or a toolkit for self-confidence as you can possibly have. So I've added two more things in there, two bonuses, if you like.
Cool. Before you get to the bonuses, let me go ahead and give them the URL that.
Oh, okay. Yes, they can... that would be good, wouldn't it? Yeah. If they go to www.esteemtrain.com.
Okay.
ESTEEMTRAIN, esteemtrain.com.
Esteemtrain.com, okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so you guys, go ahead and go there while you're there, and let's go ahead and tell them about these bonuses that you got as well.
So there's a couple of extra things I threw in because I thought, right, you know, I've talked in this interview with you about, you know, people changing their state of mind at will, and I realized that you know, I've been practicing that for many years, but most people are not used to doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I collected together 100 little, I call them mind tweaks, that over the years have come up in conversations and interviews that I've done and in things with clients. And so I put this together in a downloadable package, which I called Mind Sweeper. So if you've got cobwebs and things in your mind, I just can't get rid of these negative thoughts or feelings. I don't know how to do it.
So there are 100 different negative thoughts and feelings?
No, there's 100 different positive ones.
Oh, positive ones, okay.
Right, so that if people are just feeling low and they don't know how
to... I gotcha.
Just kind of, you know, when I said switch from thinking about Mrs. Seaman to thinking about your happy holiday memory?
Oh, okay.
It's just something that'll give people a little
smile,
great. It'll uplift their spirits, and none of them take more than 1 minute to read. So you can just print them out or have it on your computer or whatever and just open that up. So that's that one. And then one more thing I thought I kind of finished them, but I was thinking, what else can I add? And then I realized that what folks are going to do, especially if they've had a big knock in their confidence from a relationship breakup or something like that, is they'll practice these techniques. And there's more in the book than the technique than that we've just been through in this program today. They'll go through that, they'll go through the hypnosis, and then they'll come to the crunch. They'll get to a point where it's like they're going to make a leap. They're either going to, I don't know, get their ex back, or they're going to move on to a new relationship, or mm-hmm. whatever it is they're going to do. And that's when they get the jitters. And I don't blame them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I've done exactly the same too. So I've added in another little, it's a short report, but it's quite meaty, and it's a bit deep actually, but some folks I think might really appreciate it. And it's called How to Trust Everything Will Be All Right.
Okay.
And hopefully that title speaks for itself. So
gotcha.
It's just a little extra lift there for people if they're about to take leaps into what feels like the unknown, to trust in themselves and trust in, you know, as you said, the planet does keep spinning on its axis and the sun will come up tomorrow.
Yeah. Fantastic. So Esteem Engine includes the ebook, 3 hypnosis audios, plus the 2 bonuses, Mind Sweeper, as well as your brand new How to Trust Everything is going to be all right.
Yeah.
I love that.
Esteemtrain.com is the website.
Yeah, let me go ahead and spell that out again, because I'm a horrible speller, so I've got it written down here. But it's www.esteem, ESTEEM,
yep.
Train, TRAIN.com. It's very generous of you to put that all together for our listeners. And
that's my pleasure.
I think this is going to be life-changing for people. And I know your techniques work on so many other issues as well. If you're having financial issues, it all comes back down to your thoughts, your feelings, and your feelings affects your behavior. So what Trevor's so brilliant at doing is having you make those shifts inside so that you get the life that you really want and deserve.
Yes. all comes from inside us. We have all the answers and all the resources we need within us.
Well, beautiful. Thank you so much, Trevor. I'm going to go ahead and sign this off now.
Absolutely. My pleasure, T-Dub. Thank you so much for the time.
My pleasure.